The Booker Prize Foundation and the Man Booker PLC Charitable Trust have funded the production of all the books on this year's shortlist in Braille, giant print and talking book format. And a donor who wishes to be anonymous has funded the production of all remaining titles on the long list in Braille and in giant print. Here on Insight Radio, we try to talk to as many of the authors on the shortlist as possible and sample those RNIB talking books. Author Julian Barnes will be joining me shortly on the line, but first, here's a clip from The Sense of an Ending.
I remember, in no particular order, a shiny inner wrist, steam rising from a wet sink as a hot frying pan is laughingly tossed into it, gouts of sperm circling a plug hole before being sluiced down the full length of a tall house. A river rushing nonsensically upstream, its wave and wash lit by half a dozen chasing torch beams. Another river, broad and grey, the direction of its flow disguised by a stiff wind exciting the surface. Bathwater, long gone cold, behind a locked door. This last isn't something I actually saw. But what you end up remembering isn't always the same as what you have witnessed.
A clip from the RNIB talking book, The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes. Now, essentially, the book is about the imperfections of memory over time, but Julian, it's actually about so much more than that.
Well, I hope so, yes. I mean, you always have to have a sort of one-line tag to describe a book. What you want is to write a book which would take as long for you to describe everything that's in it as it actually would take to read. So it's also, yes, it's about memory, it's about time. It's also, I think, principally about getting it wrong. What happens if towards the late midpoint, early ending stage of life, you realize that things you believed for a long time, 20, 30, 40 years, turn out to be perhaps completely wrong, perhaps half wrong. And that was one of the sort of starting points for the novel for me.
It's something I've certainly noticed in autobiographies. When two people are describing the same event in two different books, there can be two completely conflicting accounts of essentially the same situation.
Yes, that's true. One of my favourite quotes is an old Russian saying which goes, "He lies like an eyewitness," which I used as the epigraph for one of my novels some years ago. It's the fact that eyewitnesses are unreliable. Even documents can prove to be unreliable. An awful lot goes missing. Evidence goes missing. Written evidence goes missing. People's evidence goes missing. And so whether you're a historian or a character in a novel trying to make sure that the record of your life is accurate, I think we're all in for a lot of trouble. Of course, historians are more used to it. Historians are more used to the gaps in the evidence. Biographers too, and what they do with them. For instance, I have a friend who's Hermione Lee, who's currently writing the biography of Penelope Fitzgerald. And about halfway through Penelope Fitzgerald, great English novelist in my view, halfway through her life, she was living on a houseboat and it sank. It took with her all the documents of her life up till then, all the love letters from her husband and so on. Mm. And so you're suddenly faced with this enormous hole and you have to sort of patch it and weave your way across it. And I think something like that can often happen in our memory of our own lives. And then, of course, what happens in the book is that something comes along which sets you off on a course of investigation in which some of your sort of fundamental certainties about what you believed and the way that you've lived your life come under serious review.
Now, a lot of your books centre on mortality and death and getting older. Is that a subject that sort of interests you, or is it just a morbid fascination?
I don't know. I wouldn't distinguish between the two. I think I've had death in my books since my first novel. It's the thing that we all have to consider, I think, though lots of us avoid it. It's the thing that puts life in context, and that makes either a sense or a nonsense of life, depending how you look at it. I think it's probably true in the last two or three books I've been looking at matters of aging and death. But then I don't think this is necessarily because they come into sharper focus for me as I get older, because I've always had the sense that death is on a sort of parallel railway track, and at some point it's just going to cross, the track's going to cross and you're going to be wiped out. So I've always had a sharp sense of it, yes. And I wrote about that in a book called Nothing to be Frightened Of about 5 years ago. But I think that I don't think my books are morbid. I think my books are lucid. And I think that a lucid looking at the darker side of life is part of what's necessary to keep you sane. I don't think running away from things or not looking at the darker side of life actually helps.
Now, The Sense of an Ending is a shorter book. Did you know it was going to be that short when you started writing it? And did you have, I hate to say it, did you have the sense of an ending to the book when you started?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. I knew what was going to happen before I started it. I generally do. I mean, I think it would be a bit strange to set off on a journey not knowing where you want to go, though I know some writers do operate like that. And having written 10 previous novels and quite a few short stories, I have a fairly strong sense at the point at which I begin, how long or concise, I would say, rather than short, the resulting text is going to be. So it didn't come in at anything longer or shorter than I expected, and I would certainly think that every idea you have has its natural length when it's turned into fiction. And you shouldn't try and stretch it. If anything, you should try and make it more concise. But I couldn't make it any shorter, so that's how it's ended up at the length it does.
You have in the past campaigned against the closure of libraries, and including RNIB's Talking Books Library in this. How important are libraries to society as a whole?
Oh, I think libraries are incredibly important, and I think it's very glib to think that, oh, everything is available on the internet nowadays and you can download a book and so on and so forth. I think both the experience of a physical book is different and the wider social experience and values of libraries, it can't be expressed in financial terms. It's a place of interchange. It's also a place where, you know, many families don't have a book in the house, and it's a place where you can get used to reading and gain comfort and an awakening of the mind from. I think it's incredibly short-sighted of this government to effectively close down lots of libraries by putting such pressure on local councils that they take what is sometimes regarded as the easy option. It's maybe the easy short-term option, but I think it's a very, very bad long-term option.
Now, focusing on the RNIB Talking Books Library,
yes.
You have supported it in the past. I remember you coming into my old workplace in Camden, recording a short story called The Things You Know for an RNIB book called Sightlines. Why do you think it's important to support RNIB?
Oh, I've supported it for many years. Because I'm a great believer in the profession that I follow, and it would be awful for people to be deprived of the pleasures of books and fiction because of blindness. I mean, it seems to me it's a no-brainer. I don't think you'd find a writer in the country who would not fully support the RNIB and all that it does.
This is a question I meant to ask you when you were actually in Camden. England was out at the time, and I wondered if you'd ever been to the Isle of Arran in Scotland, which is described sometimes as Scotland in miniature.
I didn't realise that Arran was described as Scotland in miniature, I'm afraid. No, it was the function of my own imagination and thoughts I was having about what was happening to the idea of England. And then I looked around for a useful island, and I thought, the Isle of Wight, yes, which I have remembered from childhood holidays and so on. And so I stuck it there. But I'm sure a Scottish writer might want to take on the idea of what is happening to Scottish nationhood, which I think is probably more interesting than what's happening to English nationhood, because I think the Scots have always been better at defining themselves than the English have.
Now, back to the Booker Prize. This is the fourth time you've been nominated, and you are this time the bookie's favourite.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. I was the bookie's favourite last time as well.
But you must be hoping for a win.
Well, I'd be crazy to hope not to win it. So, of course, I hope to win, yes. I mean, this is the fourth successive decade in which I've been shortlisted. And I can tell you that I know the ins and outs of not winning pretty well by now. So anything for a change. But it's, you know, it's five people who you don't know rereading all the books maybe two or three times. And always, superstitiously, I never read the other shortlisted books. So, you know, there may be something that, truthfulness, I would admit was blazingly superior to my novel, but I jolly well hope not.
We live in time. It holds us and moulds us. But I've never felt I understood it very well. And I'm not referring to theories about how it bends and doubles back or may exist elsewhere in parallel versions. No, I mean ordinary, everyday time, which clocks and watches assure us passes regularly. Tick, tock, click, clock. Is there anything more plausible than a second hand? And yet it takes only the smallest pleasure or pain to teach us time's malleability. Some emotions speed it up, others slow it down. Occasionally it seems to go missing, until the eventual point when it really does go missing, never to return.
The Julian Barnes novels available from the RNIB Talking Books Library are Arthur and George, Before She Met Me, Cross Channel, England, Flaubert's Parrot, A History of the World in 10.5 Chapters, The Lemon Table, Love Etc. and Metroland. For more information, contact rnib.org.uk. And Julian Barnes, thank you so much for joining me on today's Talking Books.
My pleasure, and I hope many of you out there enjoyed my book.